Hello, and welcome to Crossroads Podcast. I'm Gabriela Valente, Infralogic's reporter in Brazil. Today, we are going to discuss in Brazil's infrastructure landscape, focusing on the significant opportunities in the transportation segment. We are honored to have with us Gabriela Avelino, Undersecretary of Promotion and Planning at Brazil's Ministry of Transportation. Gabriela, thank you for joining us.
Hello, Gabriela. Thank you so much for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here.
Brazil has announced a substantial pipeline of highway concessions. Could you walk us through the scale of these investments and what the government hopes to achieve with this new wave of projects until the end of President Lula's third term?
Absolutely, Gabriela. Brazil is currently delivering the most ambitious roadway concession program in its history, and one of the largest globally. Until the end of next year, we expect to have completed 44 highway concession auctions. Historically, Brazil was used to holding an average of 1.5 auctions per year. And in President Lula's term, and thanks to our Minister Renan Filho's leadership, we will have raised this number to 11. And this ambitious pipeline covers over 23,000 kilometers of federal highways and will mobilize more than $57 billion in private investment. To give you some perspective, that's double what was privately invested in federal highways in all of Brazil's history up until 2022. But more important than numbers are our end goals. Brazil needs better infrastructure if we wish to grow and thrive as a country. Our roadway concession program is not just about building roads. It's about creating an efficient transport network, which fosters economic and social development. So our main goals include improving logistics efficiency across Brazil's key economic corridors, also reducing transportation costs, especially for agribusiness exports, and finally, enhancing road safety and reducing traffic fatality rates, which are a very serious social problem that we wish to correct.
It's very interesting. Many of those projects require a significant upfront capital. How are the contracts being designed to support project finance structures and also to mitigate risk for investors, especially for the international investors that are not used to the Brazilian market?
Okay, this is a key question and one that we took seriously from the beginning. The federal government has redesigned its concession models to include multiple regulatory innovations, mostly inspired by European and multilateral standards. Let me give you some examples. We have brand new risk-sharing mechanisms. So in the past, many important risks that could interfere with a roadway concession were not even mentioned in the contract. For example, extraordinary risks associated with climate change. Now, those risks are explicitly mentioned and allocated in the contract, so there is predictability. We even share the main risk when they surpass a certain bandwidth. More than just transparency, which is in itself an improvement, we are also sharing more risks than we used to, which is great for investors. Another example that I could give you is escrow accounts, which we implemented to mitigate risks associated with exchange rates and input prices, for example. So these are especially interesting for international investors. We also have a mechanism for automatic toll adjustments, which will mitigate cash flow risks due to bureaucratic obstacles. We also implemented dispute boards, which are designed to avoid litigation, which are costly. And they act on an ad hoc basis on technical matters, which will help contracts have a better flow throughout their implementation. And finally, Brazil has a special bond designed to help companies raise money for infrastructure investments. These bonds are called here incentivized debentures, and the buyer of those bonds is benefited with lower income taxes. So last year alone, there were over $3.5 billion raised using these incentivized debentures for highway concessions.
And besides the new concessions, the federal government is also working on a new retender model to optimize the stressed contracts that had financial challenges in the past. The first one to be auctioned was the BR-163 in the state of Mato Grosso do Sul, a key corridor for agribusiness. Right after, we had the BR-101 in the state of Espírito Santo. What are the lessons that we can learn from the previous concession contracts and how this new model of optimizing contracts are different from the previous procedures for retendering contracts that we used to have in Brazil.
The BR-163 corridor is indeed, as you said, vital for Brazilian agribusiness because it connects Mato Grosso, an important Brazilian state, with considerable production of soy, cattle, and other agricultural products to export routes that move billions in commodities annually. The first concession failed, in our view, due to inadequate risk modeling and unrealistic demand forecasts. And that experience has taught us very valuable lessons. The new retender model is built on transparency, investor confidence, and operational continuity. So some key improvements include a clean and efficient exit strategy for the incumbent operator without compromising service levels, a full disclosure of historical performance data, which reduces information asymmetry and levels the playing field for new bidders. We also have an improved financial model with demand assumptions based on audited data and robust risk sharing. And we also have a faster regulatory processing and legal clarity throughout the process. We worked very close to the government controller and auditor's office to give the private sector the security they need to keep investing in Brazil. So this approach ensures that stressed contracts do not become liabilities to the system. So instead, they get restructured with fairness and future-oriented principles.
So in both cases, the BR-163 and the BR-101, the incumbent concessionaires were the only ones bidding for the new contracts. In Mato Grosso do Sul, it was Motiva, which is the former CCR, and in Espírito Santo, Eco Rodovias. How does the Ministry of Transportation respond to the market concerns that market players might be hesitant to engage with these new contracts when there is also a robust pipeline of new concessions? What can be done to attract investors to each type of concession?
To be honest, I believe we need to reframe the narrative around retendered assets like those two that you mentioned. There is no lack of market interest in this type of project. It's quite the opposite because assets such as BR-163, for example, are highly valuable. They are a mature, well-known highways with strong and consistent demand, a history of stable revenue, and established toll plazas that are familiar to users and operators alike. It's precisely because of their high quality that these were among the first assets to be auctioned decades ago. So the reason we saw a sole bidder in both cases is not a reflection of market hesitation regarding the asset itself, and nor is it a hesitation towards the optimization process, but rather of the scale and competitiveness of Brazil's current infrastructure pipeline. We are offering a large and diverse portfolio of roadway concessions, so it is only natural that firms will prioritize based on their own strategies and resource availability. Moreover, the retender process for BR-163 was fully revealed and validated by the Federal Courts of Accounts, ensuring a high level of institutional credibility and legal robustness. The contract underwent substantial improvements, incorporating modern governance practices, enhanced performance metrics, and mechanisms that align with international best practices. So rather than reinterpreting the single bid outcome as a hesitation, we see it as a sign that well-structured, de-risked assets continue to attract qualified players, especially those that are already familiar with the corridor operations. These are excellent projects, and the government remains confident that retendered concessions, when well-prepared, will continue to be strategic components of our national logistic plan. So as for your last question about what could be done to attract investors to all types of concessions we have on our pipeline, I believe we need to showcase the regulatory improvements that I mentioned earlier and let the market know all the work that we have been doing. Minister Renan Filho and Vice Minister Jorge Santoro have both been to Europe and the US multiple times to talk to foreign investors and show them the quality of our legal and regulatory framework. But more than just talking, we need to listen. In these roadshows, we have collected feedbacks about our projects and improved them accordingly. So to sum up, I believe that the key is to communicate with the market as we have been doing.
In both cases of the retender, the concessionaires were not able to fulfill the investment plans that were initially designed for those roads. Why is it important to allow Motiva or Ecorodovias to participate in the bidding process? Wouldn't this represent a disadvantage for other competitors? And doesn't this model provide some sort of comfort to investors who are unable to fulfill the contracts and make the required investments?
So Motiva's participation followed strict legal and procedural rules, and the decision was grounded in ensuring continuity of services. As you already mentioned, they had returned the asset voluntarily under Brazil's formal contract return framework. So renegotiating was our way to solve the problem faster and ensure users get the quality of service that they need immediately. As I said, we worked alongside the government controller and auditor's office throughout the whole process to make sure that it was all legally sound. And to make sure the process was transparent and competitive, Motiva had to submit a bid under the same conditions as any other player, and so did Ecorodovias. In fact, their re-entry signals market confidence in the restructured asset, and that's the message that we value. And finally, as for your last question, that we might be providing comfort to investors that are unable to fulfill contracts, I believe that we are providing structured relief and not a free pass. Our model balances investor comfort with public accountability. And we acknowledge that unforeseen circumstances can affect even the most carefully planned projects. And as I also mentioned, some contracts designed decades ago had some imperfections that we were able to correct now, and that we have a more matured regulatory framework. So the retender mechanism offers a clear, legal, and transparent way for the government to restructure the assets without litigation or loss of service. This predictability is good for investors. It sends a message that Brazil honors contracts, even when adjustments are needed, and that the rules are clear from entry to exit.
That's very interesting. It's indeed a modern and new model. But shifting to another sector, on the rail front, Brazil also have ambitious plans for expanding its rail network. Could you walk us through the status of the main upcoming projects and why those projects are crucial for the Brazilian economy?
Sure. We are moving forward with two major projects this year. The first one we call East-West Integration Railway, or Fico-Fiol in Portuguese, which connects Água Boa in the grain-producing region of Mato Grosso to ports in the south of the state of Bahia and interconnecting with the North-South Railway. And the second one we call EF-118, which is a high-capacity corridor between Vitória and Rio de Janeiro, and focused on mineral exports and container transports, and enabling rail transport to the Açu port. So these two projects are crucial for three reasons, actually. The first one is that they lower logistic costs for Brazilian exports, especially grains and minerals. They shift freight from road to rail, which reduces carbon emissions, since rail emits up to 80% less carbon emissions per ton transported. And they also help diversify and decongest our logistic matrix.
Some of the key rail projects in Brazil are linked to the mining activities, for example. And there are companies such as Vale and Rumo who are deeply engaged in that type of project. How can new investors be attracted to this segment? And how do you perceive the international interest in the Brazilian railways?
We see growing interest from international infrastructure investors, including funds aligned with ESG strategies. International appetite is growing because Brazil offers scale, demand certainty, and a logistics deficit that translates into opportunity. To attract new players, we are changing risk sharing in rail contracts to provide safety for investors. And as I said before, we are promoting our projects in global roadshows, listening to what the market has to say and adjusting projects accordingly.
Brazil has been discussing a high-speed train project for many years. How have those discussions advanced so far, and what are the expectations for developing a project of that type?
The high-speed train agenda, particularly the Rio-São Paulo corridor, has been debated for decades. What's different now is that we are approaching the project with more realism, better governance, and stronger data. A private company is currently conducting updated feasibility and demand studies for this corridor that I mentioned, Rio-São Paulo, under a federal authorization and seeks to implement this line under private financing. We know that high-speed rail is capital-intensive, but it is also a strategic project with transformative potential for Brazil's southeast region. The government is not directly involved in this project, but we have established a regulatory framework which we hope may enable it. We are also conducting feasibility study for six passenger rail corridors across Brazil, which we hope to announce later this year. We are structuring this project around real estate development, and we hope to unlock new rail development opportunities under this new model.
Those are very interesting projects, and looks like the investors will have a lot to study. So to conclude our conversation, what message would you send to the international investors who are watching Brazil closely but may still be on the fence considering all the macroeconomic challenges and the geopolitical scenario across the globe?
My message is Brazil is no longer a potential. It's a concrete investable reality. We have built a pipeline that is technically robust, financially sound, environmentally responsible, and legally secure. Our institutional framework is maturing, our governance is transparent, and our contracts reflect best global standards. We understand investors' concerns, but we also know that long-term value lies where demand is real, regulation is stable, and public policy aligns with private capital, and that is what Brazil is offering today. Now is the time to take part in this transformation. Brazil is open, committed, and prepared for the next generation of infrastructure.
Gabriela, thank you very much for your insights today.
Thank you, Gabriela, for the opportunity to talk to you today.
And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in. If you found this episode valuable, please remember to share and subscribe. Until the next episode.